ngā tāringa ariare o te motu, koutou e whakarongo pēkari mai nei, tēnā he matapakinga kei te haere. Welcome to Mata with me, Mehingarangi Forbes, brought to you by Te Māngai Pāho and Irirangi Te Motu, New Zealand On Air. Soon we'll talk to political commentators Tina Wycliffe and Shane Tepo about opposition to affirmative action, anti-trans protests, the government's 36-point plan, and the performance of our new Māori MPs. Hoi mātua rā. Last week, Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters again courted controversy, comparing designated areas for Māori and Pacifica University students to the hate group Ku Klux Klan. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon described the areas as totally inappropriate, while the ACT Party is attempting to have them removed from universities. Despite the political pressure, Auckland University is standing its ground, stating it's proud of the communities it's created for students. The irony of this latest controversy isn't lost on historian and sociologist Dr. Scott Hamilton, who's researched New Zealand's own dark history of segregation. It includes Māori not being able to use public toilets, cinemas, and even swimming pools. So what does it mean for modern day society when affirmative action is misrepresented as racism? Nōku te wai maria ko taia tinana mai a Scott, tēnā koe e hoa.
Kia ora.
I wondered if we could start by looking into our own past. What might people be surprised about in our own history of segregation?
Yeah, well, if we were talking 60 years ago or 50 years ago, we probably wouldn't need to even have a background discussion on segregation. Back then, this was a hot topic in New Zealand society. The term that used to be used was colour bar or colour line. And it was a hot topic. It was a topic that was talked about a lot. It's a subject that has disappeared from consciousness, certainly from Pākehā consciousness. And Robert Bartholomew, an American sociologist who's based in New Zealand, he's done us a great service. He's published a couple of books about this subject, one of which has been made into a really good documentary by Corinne Hunziker, which is available via TVNZ. And he's really brought the subject back into public consciousness, which is great. Segregation, a lot of people I find when I talk to them about segregation, they find it hard to believe it existed in New Zealand because most of us are now familiar with the policy of assimilation, which existed in the 20th century, and we're familiar with examples of assimilation, tangata whenua being unable to use their language at school is a famous one, or infamous one, and people feel, if we had assimilation, how could we have segregation? Mm. But if you look around settler societies, colonial societies, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, South Africa, we see a combination of the two policies. There's typically a blend of them. Even in South Africa, which is famous for its segregation policies, there was also assimilation. Black students at school, for instance, were forced to learn Afrikaans. So there's a blend of these policies. And segregation wasn't just aimed at tangata whenua. At various times in our history, Chinese New Zealanders, Indians, Middle Eastern New Zealanders, and in the 1940s as well, Jewish refugees in New Zealand, they all suffered from segregation. It's as a systematic set of policies that emerges in the 20th century, but it has its roots in the 19th century, like so much of the things we experience. And there were a series of campaigns of ethnic cleansing around the New Zealand wars. The most dramatic was in 1863 in Auckland. In July of that year, Governor Gray issued a proclamation to Māori, and he said, basically, either leave town or declare loyalty to the Queen. The Great South Road filled up with refugees. People fled to the Waikato. Mm. Their villages, for instance, around Mangere, around the Manukau Harbour, they were looted and burned. And this happened elsewhere as well. And so Māori were very much removed to the fringes of these islands in the 1860s and 70s. And there was an expectation amongst many Pākehā that they would die out. We all know that terrible phrase, smoothing the pillow of a dying race. Now, this didn't happen. Even though Māori population reached a low point in the early 90s, it began to rebound. And the way James Bellich puts it, he says, the Māori mummy sat up and talked. And so you get this demographic rebound in the early 20th century. And at the same time, you have a growing Pākehā population. It's pushing into Māori areas. Mm. And so you have the two peoples coming into greater contact. and you begin to see demands for segregation from Pākehā communities. And these demands pressure local government and pressure business owners to enact segregationist policies. A really crucial event in the growth of segregation was the smallpox epidemic of 1913. Smallpox epidemic broke out. It began in the Maori community. Maori were blamed for it, and some very severe segregationist measures were introduced. People were limited to their villages. They were cordoned off. They were only allowed to travel if they had a vaccination pass, and it was very difficult to get vaccinated. And there was a beginning, really, during the smallpox epidemic, of a pseudo-scientific idea which linked supposedly low standards of Maori hygiene to disease. The word hakihaki, which sort of described traditionally a range of skin disorders, was taken, and it was developed into this sort of pseudo-scientific definition developed, where it was a specifically Maori disease, and it was a menace, it was a danger. Mm. And so you find this justification in hygiene and disease. And this is also applied to other groups, Chinese, Indians, and it becomes a justification for all sorts of restrictions. You find, for instance, in 1918, the Indian residents of the city of Hamilton went to protest to the mayor because there was nowhere they could get their haircut in the city. All of the barbers said that they Indians posed a risk, a hygiene risk, a disease risk, so they refused to cut their hair. So you have businesses like barbers, restaurants, hotels and hostels, pubs. Often you have a situation where the lounge bar is reserved for Pākehā. Other groups have to drink in the public bar, or they can't drink at all.
If we look at, just the most recent comparison of, these student areas for Māori and Pacifica, the claims of segregation, what would be your response to that, given the history we know?
Well, these spaces developed out of segregation that was suffered by the Māori and Pacifica students. A really good person to go to learn about this is Bill Pearson, who wrote the great New Zealand novel Coalflat. He was an English academic in the 50s, and he helped to found the Auckland University Māori Association, and he was their patron in the early years, and he wrote about it, and it's quite interesting to read him, the alienation of the students. They were unable to use their language on campus. There was nowhere they could go to express their culture. They were barred from pubs where the Pākehā students could go and drink. There's a famous photo on the internet of King's Arms Bar. It says natives will not be served here. In 1961, at a conference of Maori students, there were complaints about cinemas. A lot of the cinemas around universities in New Zealand wouldn't take Maori patrons. And Pearson was gay. And he had to live an underground life because of his sexuality. And he looked at these students and he thought, they are also having to live underground. I can't express myself openly. They can't express themselves openly. And so he, because he had a little bit of institutional heft, he was able to really get the Maori Association going. And the origin of today's Maori space is in that association and its activities. They did things like organise a Maori rugby team, which incidentally Winston Peters played for.
and there's many other groups, that find a quiet space or a club. Or I guess the thing is that when we talk about segregation, is it segregation when actually others and the vast majority still have spaces to go to?
No, it's not at all. And nobody is suffering from these spaces. And it may not be a case of having to get away from active racism, because campus is a lot different than it was back in the 1970s when there was the notorious engineers haka, mock haka, where they used to mock Maori, and that ended in violence. The campus is a lot different, but there are still cultural differences. I learned about these personally when I taught in Tonga. I didn't realise how embedded I was in a Pākehā sort of approach to education until I went to Tonga, and I found that students learnt in completely different ways. I was used to quiet libraries where I sat on my own. Typically, my students would learn together. They would sit together. They would be very verbal. They would read aloud often. Often they would work on the floor. You know, there were all these differences, and I never understood until then that spaces that I took to be absolutely neutral, but university library, I spent far too much of my youth, I didn't realise that that's actually quite an alien environment for some of my Tongan students. That would be a very alien environment. So you need a place where you can express your culture sometimes and be there. And there are spaces for many different groups. There are reserved spaces for international students because, you know, they're in an alien environment coming to New Zealand.
When we hear stories like this, you know, you've got the Prime Minister, you've got the Deputy Prime Minister, now you've got the ACT Party trying to remove these spaces. Does it reinforce to you that learning our history, our own history, warts and all, is so much, so very important?
Yes, it is important. And there is a resistance amongst some people, but I find there's also an openness. And when we learn the history of something like segregation in New Zealand or the New Zealand wars, it's very important to see that it's not completely black and white. One of the great things researching a subject is you see Pākehā standing up and saying, this is wrong, right back. You can see letters to the editor. You can see returned servicemen in the late 40s saying, look, I fought with Maori comrades in North Africa. Why are they being left out of it? Why can't they use their restrooms? Mm. You know, so you see this resistance as well amongst a minority of Pākehā, and gradually that becomes a majority of Pākehā. And today at Auckland University, these spaces are not enforced. They're not enforced spaces, they're respected spaces. It's not like there's a cop on the door. Students respect them, and I don't believe there's any problem on campus with these spaces. The issue has come from outside.
Today marks the commemoration of the Battle of Ōrākau, which took place 160 years ago, around about 1,400 government troops faced off against 300 defenders, a third of them were women, in an unfinished fighting pā near Kihikihi. They were offered the opportunity in the last few days to surrender, and that was met with the famous response often attributed to Rewi Maniapoto, ka whawhai tonu mātou, ake, ake, ake. We will fight on forever and ever and ever. So I just wonder, how do you remember moments like this of our history?
I think that we actually need to. It's great that we now have a day, October the 28th, when we remember the New Zealand Wars, and it's great through the work of historians like Vincent O'Malley that we're getting a better understanding of the battles. But we need to remember in a more expansive way. When Rewi made that speech, he was standing in a grove of fruit trees. Now, you know, there were fruit trees growing all over the Waikato. There was also wheat growing. There were flour mills working. There were fish being caught. There was a fleet of schooners that was supplying Auckland. And we have to remember that there was an independent Maori state there, and that state was thriving. It was thriving. It was beating Auckland economically. The settlers or would-be settlers were sitting in Auckland kicking their heels and buying Maori goods, and they wanted land. And that's why they made the war. So this was a war against Maori economic success. And we have to remember the society that was created in the Waikato. If anyone's interested, John Gorst wrote a really great book called The Maori King. It was published in 1865. It's online. He was sent basically to spy on the Waikato Kingdom by Governor Grey. He was blown away by what he saw, the peace, the prosperity, the industry. So it's a great book to read. So we need to get beyond just the military to understanding the sociology.
Tēnā koe, tēnā koe. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And if you're interested in the history of Aotearoa, there's some gems there that Scott's offered up. But RNZ has a new documentary and podcast coming out later this month, New Zealand Wars, Stories of Tauranga Moana. It is a truly remarkable chapter of our history. You're listening to Mata with me, Mihi Ngārangi Forbes. Hei, ā ta whirawhira I ngā take nui o te wā, ko honu mai ētahi mātanga tō rangapū. Joining me in the Tāmaki studio is Shane Te Pou. And zooming in from Te Tai Rāwhiti is former political editor Tina Wycliffe. Tēnā kōrua.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Tina, you have spent plenty of time in the gallery with the Deputy Prime Minister, Winston Peters. Are you familiar with this stance of his, or is this a new position for him?
Well, it's a continuation of what his entire generation, frankly, probably believed, because they were socialised in an era of assimilation and anti-Indigenous public policy and sentiment at all levels of society.
And Shane, if the Deputy Prime Minister thinks Māori and Pacifica spaces are segregation, would you expect him to be closing down Mātangi Reia, the former Māori Select Committee room or the Rainbow Room at Parliament?
No,
do you agree
no.
with what Tina says?
Yeah, my koro and our whare, I don't think, would hold that perspective. They probably didn't have the opportunities that were presented to Winston. And I know his backstory, hardworking whanau, I get all of that. But no, he won't be closing down those rooms in Parliament, because his fundamental argument here in Tamaki Makaurau is quite frankly ridiculous. Those spaces are not really exclusive spaces. They're just spaces that are put aside and have been for quite a long time for Māori, for our Pacifica sisters and brothers. And let's not forget, quite actively for the women's space.
Tina, do you think...
I just think that the fact that marginalised groups, like particularly Māori at the Auckland Business School, want a safe space, tells you that that institution has a long way to go. And the reality is those spaces actually don't go far enough. What the Auckland Business School faculty and staff need to contextualise, as our first Kai Kōrero said, is the colonial violence and systemic institutional racism that has entrenched their privileged position in society, and how that imbalance of power is inherent in everything they teach.
Yeah, and you know what? Segregation goes on today in 2024. Less than 13% of students at Auckland University are Māori. If we compare success rates between a mainstream academic institution and Wānanga, Wānanga's deliver better results for our people. How many Māori are on the council which runs our Auckland University? How many Māori are tenured professors? That's where segregation hits the road today in 2024, and that's what the discussion that I think we need to be having.
And to be fair, the Education Minister Erica Stanford did use the 13% and said that if anything, we need to work out, you know, how we're going to get more Māori into that university. Does that give you a bit of hope?
Yeah, I think she was a bit embarrassed by and blindsided by Winston's kōrero. Look, this is part of a wider narrative that Winston, and to a lesser bigger degree that David Seymour running, I think it's a faux pas initiation of a culture war that really doesn't exist in Aotearoa, and it's more about their political relevancy and trying to keep that 5-6% threshold up and that voter base that is largely reflects many older New Zealand, and that perspective, that view really is becoming more and more defunct as we learn to get on with each other. And it's not the hang-ups that my kids have, but it might be the hang-ups that some of Winston's generation have.
Well, there are some individuals in Gisborne that have some hang-ups too, because you came home, Tina, from overseas to your pedestrian, your rainbow pedestrian being attacked not once but twice. What is it with the anti-trans Wairua? Did you expect the Gisborne to be the tipping point?
Well, there isn't an anti-trans Wairua here. That's Destiny Church, and they're a very small... they don't have high profile in this community whatsoever. They're a very small group. I'm not sure if the Tamakis have even bothered to come here. So the traditional hahi here are te hahi mihinare and te hahi ringatu. And they've got a long entrenched history in these parts. So Destiny, they just came out of the last shower. And frankly, their hateful brand of Christianity is something that I'm really glad the community responded to quickly and shut down. There was a counter protest held outside the library because they were trying to save our children against the drag storytelling which was for over 16-year-olds. And then the attack on the Gladstone Road crossing. So you had these dudes acting like thugs, standing over our aunties, like Auntie Charlotte Gibson, who runs Te Poho Rāwiri Marae, and screaming in the faces of literally young girls and women. So see our civic leaders like Mayor Rehet Stoltz and Councillor Josh Farihinga And there was some brave reporting by the Gisborne Herald Māori reporter, Matai O'Connor, who was of the rainbow community, and also community activists like Hayley Maxwell. They were just quick to respond and galvanise support. One thing about people here is that we have a long history of standing up against tikanga and whakaaro that attack our way of life and our values. And so Destiny Church would do well to take heed of what's been said to them, which is, some of them are being told to go home because they're not from here. I can honestly see them getting chased out of town, like that song, Bob Marley, you know, the Bob Marley song. They'll get chased out of town like crazy ball heads.
Tēnā koe. And Shane, you know, Kay Road also had an attack. Yeah. Is there alignment with this kind of crowd, or is this flash in the pan?
Look, that was terrible what happened in Gisborne, but what happened on Karangahape Road was more so, because that really is it's a safe space for our trans and our gay whānau. Look, the anti-trans movement is driven by insecurity and hate, mainly a small number of people with large microphones. They put themselves up for election once every 3 years and then get done over like a dog's dinner. Hey, the reality is they've lost, They've lost the argument on gay rights, civil marriages, gay marriages, peeling back discrimination in terms of accommodation, etc. And for many, this is the last bigoted stand. And I think society has moved on, and I just think, Mihi and Tina, that sometimes we give these people far too much oxygen than they deserve, but we've got to call out the hate.
Let's talk about the 36-point list that was announced this morning by the government. It's the new priority list for the next 3 months. What do you make of this approach, Tina?
Well, I saw that Debbie Ngāre-Wapaka is calling for support on the for Māori to make submissions on the fast track bill that's currently before the House, which will have an impact, which is directly related to this this list of 36 priorities. At the heart of all of this will be infrastructure, projects of infrastructure, projects that will impact on the environment and peel back some of the protections there. And of course, treaty rights and the obligations for those applying for projects to consult with local hapu and iwi. How are those going to be impacted? Well, the Te Pāti Māori say that this is a direct attack. So, yeah, I expect we should really be taking heed of what's going to be happening in the second phase.
Yes, some pretty big points. I think you're talking about number 19 there, Tina, which is the removal of the ban of deep sea drilling and oiling. And then there's number 12, which is literally, let's just remove agriculture from the ETS. Don't all of these, just things need discussion, debate, and some, like removing the bans on the offshore mining, wouldn't they need public consultation examination?
Yes, they do, and they should have full select committee process. The reality is, even if the law comes into being, I think there will be legal challenge, and there certainly will be protests. Because what does this bill do? It lacks democracy, it purposely lacks accountability, and it bypasses the Management Resources Act, which puts it on a bonfire. There is no public, there is no iwi consultation. And I think Willie Jackson was right when he said 2 weeks ago, if you actually have those processes, the lack of those processes, what you come up with is bad results, and the opportunity for corruption. And you need to do is you need to have shine light on this to ensure that processes are followed properly. Look, this is what could happen under this act. The minister could get a group of consultants together that could be made up of the mining industry. That's my consultative group. Mm. I'm going to listen to them or I'm not, and then just enact. And it's a terrible road to go down, and we haven't learnt. It was only 15 years ago that we cut the so-called red tape, and as a result of that, we've got billions of dollars of leaky homes.
We shall see. Tina, just to end there, I was going to ask you, do you have a bouquet for performance so far for a Māori politician?
Oh, this might be an unpopular opinion, but I'm going to say it. Tama Pōtaka, he's defending his party policies everywhere he turns, at every hui Māori, you know, wherever there's a Māori reporter with a microphone, and he still doesn't seem rattled, or he's still not buckling. He's level-headed and he's a grafter. He's unlikely to say anything hugely controversial, but I wouldn't write him off because as a kūpapa. He's not, and sometimes it's those quiet guys, those quiet grafters, that you need to watch, because you know they're actually the ones that make the gains. Other bouquets for Green List MP Huhana Linden, super articulate in the House, super strong advocacy for Māori health, Māori development, whānau order. So she's all over the government and their policies that impact us. And Kushla Tangair Emanuel, breath of fresh air for Labour. She is us. I hope they utilise him more. And can I share that a former political party leader told me that if she's given a term in Parliament, she'll be formidable.
Ka pai. And so bouquet's coming your way, Tama Pōtaka, Kushla Tangaere and Huhana Linden. How about you?
For me, Te Pāti Māori, I fully supported their removal of GST on kai. I was very disappointed that Labour and the Greens didn't support it. You know, some will argue that the word was poorly worded, but this is what we could have done if we had a select committee. We could have held the banks to account, we could have held the duopoly supermarkets to account, we could have asked very important questions as why in a country where we can feed 40 million people, we have food insecurity and we're closing down food banks where it counts most. So I just want to say that I'm very disappointed, and I understand that some in the Labour Party Māori caucus weren't happy with the direction that the government that their caucus gave them on that. The other thing is that the Greens need to get their act together. They've got a member of parliament that has been suspended for quite serious allegations. This has been dragging on too long. This is not an employment matter. This is a political hue, and I think that particular person will not survive much longer.
Tēnā kōrua. Tēnā koe tēnā.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. Ka tau anō, ka mū āwaha, engari anō, a heri kapo. Ka rere tonu, ka wānanga tonu, ake, ake, ake. Ka nui te mihi ki te māngai pāho me irirangi te motu. Nā raua, tēnei hōtaka i taunaki. We'll be back in a fortnight. Nohoro mai.